Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Monday, February 27, 2017. The time is 9:05 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. Co-Chairman Hoffman, welcome. Oh. Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
House Majority Leader Michicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Well, I think I'm in the Senate today, but...
Thank you very much. Good to know. It is a House, though, right? Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning.
Is there anything to come before the committee before we could begin today's business? On today's agenda, we have Senate Finance Committee Bill SB 70. It's an appropriation limit bill, budget process, and permanent fund. If I can invite my Chief of Staff, Laura Kramer, and Rob Carpenter from Legislative Finance to the microphone. We will roll out the bill. First, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate has introduced Senate Bill 70 to try to address the primarily the deficit. We know that we are constitutionally required to pass an operating budget, but this session is probably more critical in the fact that 4 years ago, we had approximately $16 billion in savings. Over that course of time, the legislature with the governor has reduced the budget substantially from an $8 billion budget down to north of a $4 billion budget. But we still have a deficit of over $3 billion. And we struggled last year as a legislature trying to come up with any components to address the deficit. The Senate passed the Senate Bill 128, but time complicated things, and we were unsuccessful in getting anything major passed both bodies. So this year, we have probably just 1 year's reserves in the CBR, and it is more critical than ever that this legislature try to address the fiscal concerns of the state of Alaska. The Senate has come up with additional reductions, as was stated many times. We have the 543 plan to cut $750 million over the course of the next 3 years, but critical to the whole fiscal plan is one key component, and that is Senate Bill 70 that addresses the spending limit, which I think Senator Michicki probably could discuss more in depth. But the other portion is trying to restructure the structural changes in the permanent fund program to give the people of Alaska some assurances that the dividend is going to be protected for the long run. Without us taking action, the governor had said last year and this year that if we don't make some structural changes, the dividend could be in jeopardy. So, you know, I believe that the people of Alaska deserve the permanent fund dividend, and much has been said about the level of funding that the people of Alaska will end up in. And over the course of the last 20 years, I believe the dividend has averaged about $1,000. The first one was $1,000. And I believe that this is an affair amount to target. And we don't know what the other body may do, but this is the beginning point. We worked long and hard in the Senate and have come up with this version of Senate Bill 70, and I believe that it will be discussed and debated by this committee, by the full Senate, and by the other body. But it is something that I feel, and the Senate majority feels, is crucial to any fiscal plan that comes forward out of the legislature. Thank you, Madam President. Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. So what I'd like to do, with the support of the committee, is do a walkthrough of the bill so that the public knows what SB 70 contains. Ms. Kramer, could you walk the Senate through a sectional analysis of how this bill works and what each section does?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Laura Kramer, and I am staff to Senator McKinnon and the Senate Finance Committee. Many of the provisions that you'll see in front of you today are similar to legislation this committee and this body passed during the 2016 special session, known as Senate Bill 128. I will try to highlight which sections are similar to that legislation for your knowledge and for the public's. First, Section 1, this is similar to language you saw in, it's identical to the language you saw in SB 128 last year. That is legislative intent that the legislature in 3 years would review this legislation to make sure it is mechanically working as we hoped it would and that the numbers are returning what we plan them to. Section 2 is removes reference in current statutory appropriation limit. Right now there is a statutory appropriation limit. This section would remove that language. Section 3 is new language. This is the new statutory appropriation limit. It is set at $4.1 billion, and it is adjusted for inflation using the Anchorage CPI, which is produced by the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics. Not included in the statutory appropriation limit is unrestricted general funds. Excuse me, it only includes unrestricted general funds. Sorry. It is adjusted for inflation, as I stated, and not included is payments to the Alaska Permanent Fund, payments for dividends, payments for debt obligations, such as GO bonds, and capital projects are also not included under that appropriation limit. Section 4 is a new section. This would require the governor, when he or she submits their budget to the legislature on December 15th, to calculate that appropriation limit amount with that inflation adjustment, and they are to provide that in a report to us. Moving on to Section 5. This reduces the dedicated deposits of royalties to the permanent fund down to the constitutional 25%. Section 6, this requires the permanent fund corporation to determine the net income of the ERA, excluding the unrealized gains or losses, and removes the existing language using the old calculation of income available for distribution. Section 7, this is the percent of market value percentage at 5.25%, and this is based on an average year-end market value of the permanent fund and ERA for the first 5 of the most recent 6 fiscal years. And that's Section B under Section 7. Subsection 7 is reserves 25% of the POMV payout for dividends. That's in a later section. We'll talk about that. The remaining 75% is subject to a dollar-for-dollar reduction, and that's the revenue limit that is found in subsection 2. Subsection 1 is the total amount of non-dedicated royalties, and going back to subsection C, the reduction takes place if the royalties exceed 2. And this is also language that was found in SB 128. We refer to this as the revenue limit. Section 8, this changes the percent of market value that I just spoke of from the 5.25% to 5%, and that's effective in 3 years. Section 9, this is language that was also in Senate Bill 128. This just states that Amerada Hess funds are deposited into the capital income fund, that the capital income fund is maintained, and those funds are not available for distribution under the POMV calculation. Section 10 This is a disposition of income of the permanent fund statute. Subsection E allows for appropriation from the ERA to the general fund, subject to the provisions outlined in Section 7, which were the POMV and the revenue limit. Subsection F provides an inflation-proofing mechanism, whereby any amount of the ERA over four times the POMV payout may be appropriated to the permanent fund principal. Section 11 allows for appropriation from the ERA to the dividend fund of the 25%. I spoke with that in an earlier section. This allows for it in Section 11. Section 12, this is also language that was found in SB 128. This is stating that mental health trust funds may not be distributed under the POMV or dividend. Section 13 clarifies that the amount to the dividend fund is the amount appropriated, not transferred. Section 14, this is the similar language that we saw in Senate Bill 128. The only difference is the dates are changed. This is the 3 years of $1,000 dividends starting in fiscal year 2018. Section 15, that's conforming language with Section 11, which moves money to the dividend fund by appropriation. Section 16, also similar language. Once the money is in the dividend fund, the Department of Revenue shall annually pay dividends without further appropriation. This is to avoid duplicate appropriations. Section 17, this repeals current statutory appropriation limit language, and it also repeals the current dividend calculation that we have in statute now. Section 18 repeals Section 14, which was the $1,000 dividends for 3 years. Section 19 is transition language. We saw this transition language in Senate Bill 128 as well, and this allows the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue and the Permanent Fund Corporation to set up regulations and policies in order to implement this act. Section 20 states that the previous section, Section 19, takes effect immediately. Section 8 of this act, which is the percent of market value payout from the 5.25% to 5%, is effective July 1, 2021. And Section 22 is the effective date of the act. Other than the other effective dates I mentioned, is July 1, 2017.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, I have several. How do you want to approach this?
The next thing on the agenda, Senator Dunleavy, is to have Mr. Carpenter walk through the financials to look at that, but we're happy to.
I can wait to the end, and then there's a series of questions I'd like to ask.
Questions from committee members on the structure of the bill and what the bill does. Mr. Carpenter, can we look at the financials based on the language that we have in the bill?
For the record, Madam Chairman, Rob Carpenter, Legislative Finance Division. Did you want to walk through the model output?
Yes, please.
Okay. Before we get to that, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Did we get an opinion on whether or not this particular piece of legislation meets the single subject rule?
Ms. Kramer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hoffman, through the chair. When requesting this legislation or any piece of legislation, if there is a single subject issue accompanying your bill draft, is typically a memo stating that there is concern that there may be a single subject issue. I did not receive that with this legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So looking at the model output page, it's I think most of you have seen this. It's broken up into quadrants. Starting with the upper left quadrant, this is the depicting unrestricted general fund revenue and the unrestricted general fund budget. The blue bars on the bottom are existing unrestricted general fund revenue. The green bars indicate the percent of market value payout. The orange bars depict usage of the CBR to balance the budget. And again, this is on the bottom axis is fiscal years going out, so it goes from FY16 to FY26. You can see that by FY26, you are virtually balanced with a, the bottom left depicts actual numbers for what happens up above. And you can see that a deficit would remain approximately $58 million in FY26. I would say the margin of error on these projections is significant, that that's basically a balanced budget, Madam Chairman. The next quadrant down depicts the health of the budget reserves under this scenario. The orange bars, again, representing the CBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve, and the green bars representing the ERA. Earnings reserve account of the permanent fund. The quadrant in the upper right depicts the status quo dividend on the red line, and the dividend under the model of SB 70 at 3 years of $1,000, and then pretty much maintaining that $1,000 through the time span through FY26. The next box down from that shows the health of the permanent fund itself and that compared to the status quo. And it is maintaining its real value over that time span and ending FY26 at 102% of real value. The payout you can see on the next line down starts at 5.75 and then drops to 5%. And then drops to 5%, which provides an effective payout starting in FY18 of 4.56%. That's because of the five-year average. So the 5.25% is really an effective payout of 4.56. And that maintains that for roughly 4.5% over that time span. The next box down shows a depiction of the amount to be paid or transferred into the general fund and the amount transferred into the dividend fund. Approximately $1.8 billion would be transferred in FY18, rising to $2 billion, and by FY26 you'd have almost $2.3 billion transferred to the general fund.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, does the model assume cuts at all, this modeling?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, this particular picture has no cuts.
Okay. And it shows a $180 million capital budget, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct. Okay.
And then through the chair, just one last question on this particular graphic. On the bottom, on the right, where it says payout for dividends in general fund, reading this wrong, or is starting around FY23, is the government take greater, or is that just is it the same? I mean, has it changed in relationship to the dividend after FY23?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the payouts are directly below the box. You can see they go from $1.8 billion, and by FY23, they're up to $2.1 billion. Theoretically, as the market value of the fund grows, the payout for government and the dividend would grow with it.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Von Himhoff.
So will you show the budget and budgetless dividends? Part of Senate Bill 70 has a spending cap of 4.1, starting at 4.1 UGF. Is this budget total budget that includes designated funds, or is this just UGF?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this is the unrestricted general fund budget and revenue picture. So the spending limit would apply to this picture right here.
So the dotted line should be about $4.1 billion initially, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Himhoff. You are correct, and this is depicting, the dotted lines depicting roughly $4.3 billion. The appropriation limit excludes appropriations for state debt. Therefore, the that gets you to a level of just under $4.1 billion. So if you exclude the state obligations for state debt, which include GO bonds and certificates of participation and a few other items.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
It also excludes capital budget, is that correct? The $180 million?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, you are correct.
And the inflation factor is calculated as a constant 2.25%?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we are modeling 2.25% inflation, yes.
And can you explain the CBR earnings at 2.89%?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is the assumed rate provided or currently estimated by the Department of Revenue for the CBR.
And what has the rate of return been for the last 10 years? Do you have that information?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I do not, but it's been considerably low given the, well, I don't know about over the 10-year span, but most recently, given this, the lower balance in the CBR, the investments have been very conservative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
One of the requests we made, I'll wait for revenue and the permanent fund folks to be before us Wednesday, is that correct? But one of the areas where we've tried to apply a little bit of pressure is to, while still managing liquidity, to more aggressively invest the CBR earnings so that they're more similar to the permanent fund dividend, which I'm glad that you stayed relatively conservative on the CBR earnings, but I certainly feel like we've given up a substantial amount of potential earnings. I mean, there's been a significant opportunity cost between what the earnings have been and where permanent fund corpus earnings have been. So I hope that if this legislation does move forward, that that'll be more carefully evaluated. I understand there'll be a greater demand for liquidity. However, this model, the any greater earnings to the CBR makes this model look better. Any increase in the price of oil makes this model look better. If we have additional cuts, it looks better. I mean, there are many factors. And what we stated this morning, we've been stating, is that, frankly, if there's a kind of more of a reset on the value of a single commodity we count on so much in our budget, if that reset is significantly lower, we're going to have to look at other options. But these are making assumptions, sort of where we are today and the understanding we have with the fall forecast. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is correct.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the concerns that Senator Bishop has always brought up has to do with the maintenance of many of the state-owned properties throughout the state. Is that considered in this modeling, or is it coming out of the $180 million in capital?
Through Chair, Senator Olson, it is and it isn't. The $180 million is higher than we are today in our capital budgeting. We're for the most part budgeting for match, you know, the amount necessary to match federal funds. So there is some amount built in for deferred maintenance in the out years. I can't say it's a significant amount given the considerable backlog of deferred maintenance. So budgets, there could be pressure to have a greater capital budget than that, but we had to assume a number, and 180 is actually higher than we are now. So,
no further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, on Section 5, just a question. Why was this split, or how or why was this split determined in that manner? As to do with dedicated deposits of royalties to the permanent fund.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, this changes the dedicated royalty to the permanent fund to back to the constitutionally required minimum, or minimum. So currently there are fields, I mean our royalty to the permanent fund are based on that minimum plus any fields from 1979, a 50%. So it's about an average of 30% going into the permanent fund at the moment. This reduces it to the 25% required in the Constitution to provide more fund or more money to the general fund.
Okay, thanks. Madam, continue.
Please.
Section 7, why was a 5.25% PMV settled upon?
Senator Dunleavy, that was what drafting was asked to do. 5.25 was what was in 128 last year. Ms. Kramer.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, 5.25, we ran a variable of numbers into the model that Rob just presented, and the 5.25, part of the discussion was we've been in deficit spending for many years now, drawing from our reserves for the past six. We're needing additional funds on the front end to help us through these difficult times, so that's why it's set at 5.25 for 3 years. That's a decision point, a policy call by this body, if that should be changed.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Bishop.
And just, isn't it, I mean, I remember last year with 128, we ran the models on that 5.25 didn't fail the test when we ran modeling for the past 80 years or so, which included the Great Depression. But doesn't it drop down to 5% after 3 years?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, you are correct. It does drop down to the 5%. And I would just restate what Mr. Carpenter said earlier. If you look at the effective payout, it's not actually 5.25. We're looking at averaging about 4.5% for the next 9 years.
And that was based on a 5-year average. Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Senator Bishop?
Laura read my mind and answered my observation. So in a nutshell, you needed a multiplier, but the way the model works over the 5-year average, your effective rate, which is where the rubber meets the road, is averages about 4 or 5 over the 10 years.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The two areas of great concern have been our debt service and our PERS and TERS contributions. How are they treated in this model? Is it what's the forecasted payment schedule for those two components? Unchanged?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Yes, we have forecasted state assistance to retirement as projected by the actuaries built into the operating budget here. Same with the debt service, what we're expecting for debt service.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair. On Section 11, the dividend talks about a 25%. Why 25% and not something greater for the dividend?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, that was also a policy decision that in conversation that was a starting point. And I know there's talk of a 33% in other bills or 50% in some. It's a starting point.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Section 13 clarifies the amount of the dividend is the amount appropriated non-transferred. Can you explain that? Appropriation versus transfer.
Mr. Carpenter.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. The intent is to signify that you're making an appropriation to the dividend fund and then there are no further appropriations required. So it's instead of just stating that it's a transfer into the dividend fund, you're making an appropriation.
Senator Dunleavy, could I follow up?
Sure.
Mr. Carpenter,
The governor vetoed last year's dividend, which is a sensitive subject to many Alaskans. Does this language affect his ability to veto at all?
Madam Chairman, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
So that was my next question. So the governor can still veto a dividend?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, as we go through this, it would be interesting to understand the choices that were made in the past, considering that Article 9, Section 15 of the Alaska Permanent Fund talks about at least 25% of all mineral lease rentals, royalties, and royalty sale proceeds, as well as federal mineral revenue and bonuses, shall be placed in the permanent fund. It'd be interesting in this discussion if we had a one-pager on why different numbers were chosen and what their objectives were at the time. It'd certainly be helpful for me. I've listened to the transcripts. I think a fairly broad-based knowledge of the formation of the fund as well as the ensuing dividend program that came afterward, but it would be, I think it would be good for the public to hear. I think it would be good for members to understand, not just Senate members, but I think the entire Senate would benefit from that.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. I believe that many may not know that the legislature has contributed billions of dollars in excess of its constitutional responsibility to make sure that the fund is both healthy and, as Senator Dunleavy is pointing out, additional contributions from the royalties that we've received off of some of the assets that we have maintained. So I believe that number is somewhere between $26 billion, and we've paid out $34 billion to the people of Alaska. But we can fine-tune those numbers so folks can have those numbers. I think that would be helpful to understand the legislature did not spend all of those dollars but did reinvest additional contributions above what was mandatorily required. Senator Dunleavy?
Just thank you, Madam Chair. Just two more questions. Under the spending cap, how do we prevent or how do we deal with the possibility of shifting what normally would be considered operating money under capital, which has happened in the past? How do we prevent that from happening so that becomes too large of a hole to make it effective?
Senator Dunleavy, I'll try a stab at this, and then if others want to join me in responding, I would appreciate that from this table. It's our responsibility. In the past, people have taken operating money and moved it over to the capital budget and called it one-time items before. Several years ago, under the leadership of Senator Stedman, who I believe is a CPA or certainly well-versed in finances, went through a process with the other body to actually outline reoccurring spending and line up our books so that what you're speaking to would not happen. So it's the legislature itself that has to hold itself accountable to make sure that capital items are in the capital budget and operating items, reoccurring expenses, are in the operating budget. And certainly as a chairman of the capital budget, I have pointed to a few items that are in the capital budget this year that I believe were moved there that belong in the operating budget. So again, as your chairman, with your support, we will realign the budget that we received so that those policies and those particular transactions stay where they're supposed to be.
Thank you. Just one last question. Can we get a run on this graphic with $300 million in cuts?
Certainly. Mr. Carpenter, the reason the $4.1 billion is before the committee for consideration was because we were at 4.275 right now. Help me remember the number of current spending. So it did take into account a reduction, not the entire $300 million, but it did take into account a reduction. So can you speak to that?
Madam Chairman, the 4.3 depicted on the model is basically our spending level now. If you assume the exclusions under the appropriation limit, primarily the amount going to debt service, then you're at roughly just under 4.1 billion, 4.080, which gives you a little bit of headroom before you start your limit.
Thank you. So if Mr. Carpenter, can you prepare that run so that we can see that with the 300 million in reductions? That's certainly our goal. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. So I'd like to talk about the Anchorage CPI as the inflation index. I see with the POMV we're looking at a five-year look back, and that helps to normalize or keep take away some of the variability, which is the big highs and big lows over time. I think with the CPI, if you look back what the Anchorage CPI has been, there also has been some variability as well. If we just do a 1 year, I worry that we're going to have too much jumps in 1 year and then it's going to fall in the next year. Have we given it any thought to do also a five-year look back of the CPI in Anchorage? And I believe that's the only one that's reported is the Anchorage CPI, and that's why we're using it. There's not really one for Alaska. I think there's just one for Anchorage is my understanding. That's my first question. The second question then is, a five-year look back, I think, will give us a more smooth over time. Thoughts on that?
Mr. Carpenter.
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I don't believe there's been discussion of an averaging of the CPI, but that is certainly a reasonable something to consider. You're right on that. Inflation has some volatility. It's not as extreme as market returns, but...
Senator Michicki.
Could you provide the committee with the 20-year Anchorage CPI, a chart, so that we have an understanding of that fluctuation? And I just, perhaps, and I can wait for revenue. Using Anchorage CPI, in my view, also provides some cost control when you look at the state as in an overall basis. Costs elsewhere are proportionally higher as Anchorage CPI adjusts. Those other costs adjust at a faster rate. There's a proportional increase in particularly rural areas of the state. So doesn't using Anchorage CPI actually help control your costs and increases more than a Alaska-wide index would have an effect on the future draws or future increases for the appropriation limit?
Through the Chair, Senator Michicki, I think that's a fair assessment, yes. You have a more conservative growth rate in your appropriation limit using the Anchor CPI than if you had used an index of all Alaska, which I'm not sure exists, but the assumption is accurate.
Ms. Kramer?
Madam Chair, for the committee, as Senator Von Imhoff stated, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics does only provide a calculation for Anchorage. They do not provide a calculation for statewide. So that is why that was selected. And then I would also just like to follow up on Senator Dunleavy's questioning with regard to the capital budget and how to control operating expenses and not moving them, shifting them over to the capital budget. In addition to the comments that you made, Madam Chair, you'll notice on page 2, line 19, it refers to the definition of a capital project, which is in statute. It's pretty strict and straightforward as to what a capital project is. I'm not saying that appropriations couldn't be shifted under the capital, but it's specific to construction, repair, structural improvement, land acquisition, those types of things, and a $10,000 threshold.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Senator Bishop.
Along the same lines, just a comment, but just for members to think about. I mean, coming out of the last $9 a barrel oil downturn that we had in the 80s. And when we came out of that, when we made that transition, you can go back to the Department of Labor and ask Neil Fried, but he can show you about a 20-year run. The state of Alaska grew at a steady. It was a 1% growth. And I mean, I think members can, I don't know, it gives me some comfort, you know, that we're, this plan is starting to hit the sweet spot. Is it there? I don't mind, need some tweaks. But and the last thing I would say is to my colleagues, and Senator Olson talked about a little earlier, so, you know, the $180 million capital budget. Deferred maintenance, we have to get on a schedule. This legislature has to, and working with the administration, has to get on a schedule. And if we don't, we're never going to get out of these peaks and valleys with UGF funds. Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, what is your timeline regarding the bill? In other words, when are you expecting amendments? When are you expecting to move the bill, take action on the bill?
I don't have an expectation right now, Senator Dunleavy. We're waiting for State Affairs to send us the other options.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Michiki.
This is play off of Senator Bishop a little bit. I think we all agree that we were in emergency management mode the last several years, right? We just didn't have the opportunity to spend on deferred maintenance like we would prefer. And I absolutely agree with you. You know that is a debt burden that we have added and that we will continue to add till we have a comprehensive plan on dealing with deferred maintenance. What I think this does is it stabilizes it. First of all, it tells the world that we have dealt with the vast highest proportion of our fiscal gap. If all remains constant that's in your modeling, we balance by 24 or 25. I can't remember what year. Maybe it's 2026. But I think what it allows is when we do have what we hopefully see is an increase in revenue, that we can start planning comprehensively. I just think when you're in emergency management mode, those are one of those things that ends up getting pushed to the side that bites you later. I absolutely agree with you. Those costs are going to be higher. But I think without a bill such as this that it sets a tone of kind of what we can expect. We talked about it this morning. If the price of oil dramatically resets to a lower level, we're going to have to look at other options for paying our bills, which include cuts and possibly broad-based taxes. We hope we don't get there. We hope oil prices go the other way. That allows us to fund those projects. But I just want the public to know that a lot of us agree with you, but on the emergency management mode that we've been in the last 3 years, it just simply hasn't been an option. We've just been trying to manage the highest priority items that come up, and hopefully we get there. Hopefully this does stabilize our economy. Hopefully it does a good job of bringing us back out of a recession, frankly, due to the fact that investors in Alaska can kind of say, all right, I think we can look at Alaska again, because at least we understand what it's going to look like and we know what potential remaining gaps may look like, and we're willing to invest. Without that, I think everyone was afraid that we were in a downward spiral that made Alaska a fairly risky environment in which to invest. So, anyway.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Senator Von Imhoff, followed by Senator Olson.
Thank you. So on the subject of deferred maintenance, one of the challenges, I think, is to come up with a plan for deferred maintenance, as in when the Anchorage School District a few years ago, they did a CPI, I can't remember the acronym, but what they did was they looked at every single building that Anchorage School District owns, spent 2 years going through a rubric analysis and evaluating each building, and then prioritizing based on which buildings are in the greatest need of deferred maintenance or replacement, and then put them on the top, and then created a plan over the next 6 years that was very methodical about which buildings was going to get what and how much it was going to cost. I don't know if that's a possible because the state assets are so much greater, but I think rather than saying we just need to do deferred maintenance and, well, okay, well, how much, which buildings, which aspects, why this one first versus the next one, is it the district that yells the loudest or is it the district that, or is it the whole encompassing statewide evaluation that has a reasonable prioritization and evaluation system that makes sense, and then we can plan it over time. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carpenter, I'm assuming you're the one that put the model together. Obviously, we've heard rumblings from the other body as to the state income tax being proposed out there. If it does, if a state income tax is indeed implemented, how would it change your modeling and the numbers that are here on this particular page with all the colors there? At the rate that they're talking about passing over there is what I'm asking.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it would look a lot. How do I phrase this? There would be surpluses quicker. Actually, there would be surpluses on this upper quadrant. Upper left quadrant, yes, sir. And I don't know probably when they would kick in at that rate. Somewhere around FY23, you would start seeing surpluses.
No further questions, Madam Chairman.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just a quick comment on what Senator Von Imhoff was saying. I think we really need a maintenance schedule along the lines of what's being discussed, but also that includes priorities and what items may be up for disposal instead of repair or refurbishing. In other words, have a reevaluation of all the assets the state owns or its agencies own, and then come up with a plan that actually puts how is the priority, as Senator Von Imhoff said, is it who's ever district, or what is the criteria by which we attack some of these deferred maintenance issues first, but also have in there a disposal, a selling off, an abandoning process as well, because I can't imagine that every asset that we own is still being utilized in the manner it was intended. And then one last question. On the appropriation limit that the Senator from Nome, Gullivan, asked, I think your response was it would look different. If there was an income tax passed, which many of us hope doesn't occur, does that prevent us from spending that income tax money? Does anything in this bill prevent us from spending that income tax money?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the income tax would be considered unrestricted general funds. However, your appropriation limit is as good as the legislature makes it. It's subject to you can't exceed it with a simple majority vote. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Well, Senator Dunleavy.
Just to follow up, the regulator that's in here regarding the price of oil, the amount of income from oil, the income tax would fall outside of that, correct? In other words, if the price of oil hits a certain spot, we reduce the draw on the permanent fund. But if you have an income tax off the side, theoretically you can raise as much money in income tax and potentially spend that as well?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, you're correct. The revenue limit applies to POMV draw and oil and gas revenue above that, as you stated.
Thank you.
So a possible amendment, if someone thought an income tax would pass, would be to drop it under the limit and include it.
So just to follow up on that, Madam Chair, I think it would be any revenue, gas tax, tire tax, sales tax, anything.
Senator Machikin?
I think that is a great point, that you have to expand the volatile revenue to ensure that your primary focus is on the health of the corpus and building it and our reserves as soon as possible. So I think that's a worthwhile discussion. I just wanted to touch on something Senator Dunleavy said that I absolutely agree with. If we have a dramatic improvement in the price of oil, we've seen what happens in the past, and people suddenly find places to spend money that perhaps do not have a healthy outlook on building our savings for the future. I mean, my vision is an eventual situation where the earnings off the fund will cover all of our state costs without the need for a broad-based tax in perpetuity, and that's a very doable thing in our state. Yeah, the budget clarification project you alluded to earlier that happened a few years back was to control the leakage and to try to keep legislators from becoming creative when excess funds were available to find other ways to get around sort of the spending limits that have been in place. Remember, we're just adjusting an existing statutory spending limit, and our plan is for a constitutional limit in the future once we understand that we have the right growth in play. But I think we absolutely have to be mindful of additional revenues in the future as they come to play. I mean, it doesn't count a comprehensive plan for deferred maintenance, and you can check with the Department of Transportation. They have a running tally of deferred maintenance. I mean, I think they manage it well. We just haven't funded it, but I think there are assets in this state that we've kept on the books. I know when I was a mayor, when you would build a new city shop, they would find a dang good reason to keep the old city shop, and suddenly they'd be storing things that we probably should have sold on surplus and end up using the space. I mean, it takes a lot of discipline, and the legislature's going to have to exercise that discipline to make sure that that isn't the case if we get back to those years. I mean, I have the chart somewhere in this pile because I used it in my town hall. When you got to those years of extreme, although the legislature has been good in putting excess revenues into the permanent fund, I think some things were built on the capital side that probably should have never been built. So we're going to have to keep our keep that at the forefront of our attention in the years when we do have excess revenue to make sure that it's spent for the greatest use, including future savings.
Ms. Kramer, it's my understanding that the departments do have a list of their facilities as well as the schedule that's already in place. Could you speak to that at all? I know that you and Mr. Carpenter go through with each agency their capital budget request. Can you tell us a little bit about that process as we close out the deferred maintenance conversation?
Sure, Madam Chair. So I contacted the department, well, Office of Management and Budget, probably 2.5 weeks ago, specific to the deferred maintenance conversation. They do have a running list with criteria on how they prioritize those needs and those requests. So they actually have a presentation ready and available to present to this committee. It's just a matter of working it into our schedule and having them before us to present that information. And I know that's something that is a priority and we will be seeing in the next few weeks probably. But you're correct. There are plans within not only individual departments, but I believe directed by the governor and his office on how to prioritize those and meet our needs.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. I would like to acknowledge that the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Hoffbach, has been with us for the entire time that we've been speaking this morning, as well as OMB Director Pat Pitney, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue Jerry Burnett, and the Tax Division Director Ken Alper. So our comments are being recorded as far as what they might speak to us about when they have the microphone. SB 70 is what we've been talking about today. It's an act relating to an appropriation limit, budget responsibilities, the Alaska Permanent Fund, the earnings of the Alaska Permanent Fund, the earnings reserve account, the mental health trust funds, relating to deposits into the dividend fund, and relating to calculation of payments of permanent fund dividends. These are all issues that are extremely important to all Alaskans. We tried to roll this out as quickly as possible so that the people of Alaska have an opportunity to hear the bill, which we've tried to provide today, to understand what each section of the bill is proposed to do. If you think about it, each section is an opportunity to turn a knob in public policy. As an example, a knob on setting a percentage of market value draw. At my constituent meeting this past weekend, someone asked me, what is a percent of market draw? That means that the total fund value that is available in the permanent fund, that we take a flat percentage rate, like the earnings from the fund, and that rate could be used in a calculation that we would provide dividends and a revenue stream for state government. So if someone else has any additional information for the people of Alaska on percent of market value, could you add those comments now? Just wanted to make sure that I wasn't incorrect in the statement.
So as we go forward, each section is an opportunity to do things a bit differently. This bill is in draft form. I think the governor said that his proposals were in pencil. This bill is subject to change by each member of the body that it is residing in. My hope is to move a piece of legislation out of this committee as quickly as possible. The people of Alaska are counting on us. National credit rating agencies are watching and talking about Alaska, not only in our credit reports, but in credit reports across the United States. As an example, our unfunded pension liability exceeds $6 billion. And so while we're trying to address a $3 billion shortfall in an operating budget, we have huge issues that remain unsolved. A $6 billion pension liability based on an 8% of rate of return on those capital assets. Those assets right now, for the past 32 years, I believe, have achieved on average an 8% rate of return. But nationally, pension programs and private programs are starting to reduce those assumptions for returns. And so I point this out only to say to Alaskans that while it may look like we're solving a huge portion of our problem, and I believe that we are, structurally we are in imbalance. I totally agree with other plans that are out there, other proposals that are out there that involve reductions and another way to change what we do. But in the end, what I've told my constituents at my constituent meeting for multiple meetings is that what we do requires different portions of our state's involvement, that Eagle River, Alaska does not tell the rest of the state what it has to do. Eagle River, Alaska, Chugiak, Alaska, their representative has to convince other members in other regions of our state which proposals are the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. And so as we go forward, it is a collaborative process that requires all of us to come together for the best interests of all Alaskans, not an individual district, not one individual voice, but that one individual voice can make an incredible difference. But you have to convince your colleagues, you have to convince regions of the state through the election process, through your representation at this table and in the halls of the Capitol, how we should move forward and face both the $3 billion deficit and how we will solve a pension liability that is hanging over our head in excess of $6 billion. So we have a huge challenge in front of us. I have optimism that the people at this table will bring the people's views to the table, both those that don't want to touch the permanent fund dividend, those that believe an income tax should be in place, those that think the status quo is fine and that we can just draw from our earnings reserve account, and those that think a more structural change statutorily needs to be in place to protect the people of Alaska and pull us from a continued nosedive in the recession that we're currently in. Alaska has the highest unemployment rate by, I believe, over 2%. And as economists have told us, in retrospect, we are now in recession. Other comments from committee members on SB 70? With that, is there anything else to come before the committee? On tomorrow's agenda, we'll have Pat Pitney to discuss FY 18 amendments to the operating budget. We're adjourned.